Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to The Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a special guest with me today. My guest today is Armin Kavaya. What's going on, bro?
How you doing? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you, man. Very well. Armin, just before we get into the thick of the conversation, maybe just give a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, of course. Just a brief one. My name is Armin Kavaya. I'm originally from Albania. Currently working in the UK. Moved to the UK when I was 12 with the family, as a refugee at the time due to the troubles that we had at back home. Then from that age, started coaching or playing around the age of 16, just through grassroots football at a club called London Tigers, which is the club actually that made me grow up as I went through my journey. That's where I got most of my opportunities, my love and passion for football. So at 16s, started playing with their under 17s at the time, and then under 19s, then going on to their reserve team, and then a little for a couple of years with their first team. But yeah, that's more or less kind of the start of my journey and where I'm from and how I got into it.
Amazing. Let's talk about then. Obviously, you know, coming to the country at such a young age, in such a challenging time, what was it about football that, you know, kind of gravitated you towards it?
Basically, it started back home. My father was always a football fan, always watching Brazil, so, you know, I grew up watching Brazil. My cousin luckily was a professional player at the time, so we used to follow him around with the local team that at the time was playing the top division. He was a striker, so he obviously, you know, he's scoring goals and you're always kind of following him. And then from there, I always wanted to play, but we just never had that opportunity. I never had the opportunity to start there just because my family, as I said, you know, the trouble that was going on at the time in the country was something that my family wanted to get out. And so that we constantly were delaying it for me to join a football club, because that's how it worked. They basically, you can just join any academy. So unfortunately, until the age of 12, I didn't join anywhere, and then left, and then I didn't know anyone here. So yeah, the challenges were quite extreme at the start, but I thought football was my safe haven that helped me a lot when I came here, just because you could go out and you didn't need to speak the language to just play football. And that actually helped me with the language and communication as well.
I can imagine. And obviously the people say all the time that, you know, football is a world language, isn't it? Really,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, the opportunity to kind of just come across and obviously, you know, just start playing football and not really having to speak the language. You know, let's talk about it a little, because that's obviously quite a big challenge and quite a big step for you to take as well in terms of coming over, playing. Did you find any differences in the mentality and the styles in terms of what they were like here compared to back home? And, you know, what was your first position that you went into? Were you just following after your cousin's footsteps?
Yeah, that's it, really. I just, you know, everybody wants to be a striker when they start off. So I always used to play up front and always used to run around like headless chickens at the time. but gradually, you know, whilst I joined the semi-pro team, with their youth teams, the coaches that I had at the time, which were really good role models for me, not just as a player, but as a person, and then as a coach, because they've gradually grown and gone abroad and done quite well, so they had really good values. But yeah, it was a time when I really didn't know anyone. I didn't know, you know, who I could kind of relate to, or who I can ask for help, and football just helped me through that, and through gradually knowing people within the community, they pull me into the semi-pro team.
You mentioned it a couple of times already, you know, that the environment at London Tigers helped you grow as a person. Just talk to that a little bit more in terms of what does that mean? What does that actually mean practically?
The environment is something that I strongly believe in now, which helps me with my day-to-day work. I think the environment is really important. I think the environment that you set, it can create the beast, if that makes sense. So the people that were there, they were very professional, very serious. Although the club was a semi-pro club, they had ambition to go further, to grow as coaches. And so they really did things properly. And that environment was quite nurturing. Like I said, very professional with rules and boundaries in there. But at the same time was, you know, quite free, you know, to express yourself. So I think they had a really, really good environment with a mixture of different nationalities in the team, which I really enjoyed. And that allowed me to express myself, even though I couldn't speak the language. I felt comfortable in that environment.
Let's build on that. Then, as obviously you mentioned, that some of the experiences that you were, you know, exposed to, or some of the people that you're exposed to, obviously not just from playing perspective, from a coaching perspective, you know, helped and encouraged you to try and, you know, push on and become, you know, who you are today, essentially. Mm-hmm. So what was that like? You know, what was it about coaching, and when did that first come into kind of into your path, if you like?
It's by chance, really. At the time I was in school, and then I was still playing, they were doing level one at the time, and it was for free, and I just thought, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do when I went to A levels, at GCSE's time, and then A levels later on, and something that, you know, it was football based, and I wanted to be in football for a long time, but as I said, the opportunities that I had, that's what I'd like to believe anyway, but, you know, I probably wasn't good enough. But the opportunity that I had, I didn't know if I could go and earn a career, you know, and earn a living from it. You know, I might have played half decent level or a conference or something like that if I really, really tried. But I didn't want to be in football for 10, 15 years, you know, at the age of 35, let's say, and then stop and get out of it. I wanted to be in it for longer. So it was something that I wanted to explore a bit more about. So I did the level one, and then I quite enjoyed that. And then I just got this hunger for it. So I started, I went into level two a year later, and then level three by the age of 20, I think I was. And then I was doing my A license at the age of 24. But at the same time, at 23, as I probably talk a little bit more about, I got the opportunity to manage a semi-pro team, which, you know, at the time was quite difficult to do, but they trusted me with that. So yeah, it's just gradually. And then I stopped playing at the age of 22 just because I got an opportunity at Crystal Palace to work within the academy, and then worked there for 2 years and went back to the same pro team to manage. So that's the reason why I kind of stopped playing, because I wanted to be in football, not just for, you know, like I said, for 15 years, but I wanted to be in it for my life, for the whole lifetime, really. That was my passion.
What was your goal return?
I went back in terms of positions. I ended up, you know, I always wanted to play up front, but the coaches started dropping me back, so I started playing right back for most of my career.
Fair enough.
So not many goals, really.
No, it's fantastic, obviously, you know, to see that transition and, you know, to kind of have that foresight early on in your journey to think, you know, How can I create some longevity in my passion, if you like? So, you know, just building on that, then obviously, you know, you mentioned there about going through your level one, your level two, and your A for B, and then eventually your A for A, all at quite young ages, and, you know, which is a real, you know, topic of discussion all the time around whether coaches should progress that quickly or that at that young age, whether there's limited or, you know, enough experience, if you like, at that age, whether to really, you know, really be pushed on into that coaching pathway.
It depends.
And yeah, not 100%. And obviously the coaching part, you know, the coach education system has changed so much recently as well, especially in the last 10 years. What was it like for you back then, obviously going through it? And I can imagine you probably went through a very similar process to myself and how your level one was and your level two and so on and so forth. You know, what would you say the biggest takeaways from back then that you kind of still stuck with you now?
I think the firstly, just to recap on that one, I think there was a little thing called, and I think people still use it, badge collecting. It depends, really, you know, it depends where you are. It depends on your journey. It depends on, you know, I was doing a lot of things at the time and I needed the knowledge and obviously the qualifications to progress. You know, we did level one. And as you know, the level one is an introduction of what coaching is. Level two gives you a bit more in depth into it. Level three, you start talking about, you know, how to manage a team and how to, you know, tactically and so on. And then your A4A is obviously the ultimate one. But for me, it wasn't like I was rushing it. I was thirsty for knowledge. And I was trying to find different ways to kind of gain that knowledge. It wasn't just the qualifications in football. I was doing other things outside of it, analysis courses, as well as my degree that I was doing at the same time. And then I did either physiotherapy like qualifications at the time, just trying to get a general broad understanding of what football is. And because, as we know, a lot of people tend to go in one field. I did all of them, even down to level seven referee, introduction to refereeing, just because I was hungry for the knowledge.
I think that, you know, just to pause you on that one, I think that's such a key thing, really, because you're right, there is a lot of coaches, you know, back then and even now, that are just, you know, on this badge collecting journey. And, you know, I think back about my journey, and I think between my level one and my level two is probably 6 months. I was, you know, between my doing the level two and the UEFA B for me, I completed all three of the youth modules back then. And then I kind of took 18 months out before I came back into coaching and did my UEFA B. So I kind of, if I take out the 18-month period, probably similar to yours, where I went from level one to kind of UEFA B within the span of 3 years. Mm. And then eventually, within probably 6-7 months of finishing my B license, I was starting my A license, not too dissimilar to yours. But for me, people always said, oh, don't rush through it. Don't, you know, make sure you consolidate. And that's their favorite word to use. But for me, it was like, you know, very similar to you. Well, I was thirsty for the knowledge. And for me, the way I saw it was this: if I knew what I was next, then I could start putting that work into place now, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you had a goal, and that's the same. You know, I knew where I wanted to go and where I wanted to be, and to get there, I needed those qualifications to open the doors. Firstly, but like you said, at the same time, you know, there's certain positions that demand that knowledge during that time, and I was managing semi-pro team. Now, as I said, this semi-pro team is, you know, not making a big deal out of it, but at the same time, there was players there that had played, you know, professionally in certain countries like Albania, Estonia, Lithuania, and different Eastern European countries, and even from Brazil, like Division Two and so on. So these players were a good standard. So I couldn't go and manage these guys, you know, not knowing what I was doing. So that it demanded it from me. And then competing in it, you know, in the league, or whether that was FA Cup or FA Vars, these are not competitions that you take lightly. So you had to be ready for it. Now, I couldn't wait for you know, when they were talking about, oh, yeah, wait for 2 years. No, but actually I was applying everything I was doing almost on a daily basis. Mm. So I don't think if you're in the right environment and if you're developing the qualifications that you are doing on a daily basis, then yes, you can fast track your learning.
Is it really fast tracking if you're actually implementing the stuff and you're applying it? Because I think this is where the challenge comes, isn't it?
Maybe fast tracking is probably the word, but you look at it, the ex players, you know, they tend to go straight into the A and or into the B and then into the A qualifications. You know, that is fast tracking, but that doesn't mean they don't have the knowledge. They have the fantastic knowledge. So it's about, have you got that knowledge? Have you had that experience, I should say? So you've got to really be ready for it, but also be doing the day-to-day work. And if you're talking about badge collecting, he's not doing anything in between the badges. So yeah, I do agree with you. It's not fast tracking if you're working on a daily basis trying to develop yourself.
No, I think you make a great point there, because the reason I asked the question is because people will say, well, you know, I think you summed it up very well in the last bit there, where you said fast tracking is about, you know, doing the bits in between, not just trying to jump from one to the next without actually ever, you know. And I'm not really a big fan of when coach developers or coach educators turn around and say, oh, you need to go away and do 2 years. Well, actually, it's not as simple as that, because you don't know what I'm going to be doing in those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
My 2 years could be someone else's 6 months.
Yeah.
And vice versa, do you know what I mean? So a very similar thing happened to me on my B license, where the tutor, you know, basically said to me, go away and do X number of hours before you think I'm progressing to your A license.
I think that was the general feedback to all of them.
But you know, had he asked the right questions and learned enough about my context, he would have understood that actually the number of hours that he put down for me, it was only going to take me 4 weeks, because I was working in multiple different environments, getting loads of hours on the grass, and it was all I was doing at the time. Whereas for someone else, that number might span over 2 years.
Absolutely.
So I think you know, there needs to be probably a bit more diligence in that process as well. So, you know, let's talk about that for a second. So how did you find the pathway back then? And obviously, I know, you know, we've known each other for a number of years. We used to work together as well, and you know, we've even went on to the Advanced Youth Award together at the same time. By that point, you already have your A license. So, you know, unless my memory lets me down here, the AYA is probably the only course that you've done as part of the quote unquote modern pathway within the English football coaching education system. What were the biggest things that you kind of appreciated or maybe undervalued prior from the old pathway? Maybe how has that been shaped since then?
I did like the old one. It tells you where you are right now. So, you know, whether you're ready or not, they'll tell you that. But I do like the new one with they're giving you the feedback. They get the opportunity to come and observe you in your working environment. It's not, okay, come and deliver a session, and then you got some tick boxes to meet just to get through that session. That doesn't make me a coach on, you know, whether I fail on that day. I could get something wrong on that day, and you know, you're failing me. So I think there is negatives of the old one, but there's loads of positives of it as well. But I do like the new one. I think, like you said about the AYA, it's something that you gradually work towards something, and then you get feedback as you go along the way through the coach educators that work at your club. So there's benefits for both, really. But I do like that fact. It's like I said, it's changed a little bit.
Do you feel like what's your general view of the standard of coaches that are coming through in more recent years then?
It's a difficult one. Because I'm still a developing coach myself. I'm still learning myself, and I don't think I'm in a position to really be judging, young coaches that are coming through. But there is that when you're going through it without the qualification and those demands and those criteria that you have and just getting through it, I don't know. I just think we get quite a diluted type of coach now, and I don't know. I think it's something that I still like the old way. I'm still a bit, you know, a fan of the old way.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And the reason why I asked the question more specifically is because there is this big debate at the moment as to whether the standard of coaching has dropped. My argument was, I don't know if it's fair or, you know, in anyone case to maybe judge whether the standard has dropped, but maybe what has seemed competent has definitely changed.
Yeah,
in terms of there's a range of styles of coaches, and there's probably more specialist coaches in different areas of the game, especially with the emergence of the Advanced Youth Award over the last few years as well, and you know, maybe having some phase specific specialist as well. And
I find there's a lot of, you know, theoretical. They've got loads of ideas and loads of different concepts, but the process of it, I think, not understanding the process of it, and that comes through experience on the grass. So they come in with all these loads of different ideas, but the process of how a player learns and how they develop, I think, it's really important to understand first of all. The quality may have dropped. Like I said, I didn't want to really make that statement, but it has dropped, and I agree with you. But I do think that's to do with like you said, about the hours, the process of hours. And that's why I've, you know, although previously it was done unconsciously by somebody passing you and signing a form and saying, go away and do 2 years, 3 years, I do like the new way where they come and observe you. So they're looking at you gradually.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, do you think there's just, I don't even know if it's fair to say necessarily the standard of coaching has dropped, but I think there's certainly, in my opinion, the old pathway maybe had a lot more emphasis on technical understanding of the technical and tactical knowledge of the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the new kind of, or well, the modern pathway doesn't necessarily cater for that same aspect. So when we're saying that, you know, the standard has dropped, it's maybe the technical tactical standard of knowledge. Yeah. Yeah. Has taken a hit, but is maybe seeing developments and improvements in other areas of the coaching pathway, if you like.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think when I was doing before I did my A license, I should say, I did, there was three courses. There was the position specific courses. I found them very valuable in terms of the detail. That was during with Dick Bay at the time. He went into so much detail that you thought, wow, you know, it inspired you. And that's the detail you need to go into when you come into academy football, when you come into first team football, really. So it's something that I think it is lacking. But yeah, Taking those courses away does not help that, because I think that's an in-depth course. It's really honed in into certain positions, what the detail in those positions.
I think you're spot on. And I think that, you know, the one kind of observation I'd really make is that especially having delivered coach education myself in the last few years, is that I just think there's a lack of appreciation from a large number of coaches coming through the processes now around just how important that technical detail is. And I think, you know, you made a great point there, Ryan. That's the type of information, that's the type of detail that you need when you're going into academies in the first-team environment. But I don't think it's present enough even now in those environments.
No.
Because of the shift and the change in the pathways, and, you know, maybe through the lack of specific types of courses like the ones you've just mentioned there about the position specific elements and things like that, where I think it just again really highlights for me, having gone through that pathway, and probably for yourself similarly, where there's a massive gap here. There's a massive gap in knowledge.
You can see that because you talk about it. Like, I see it sometimes with part-time coaches sometimes coming into academy, and it's not their fault, not at all, when, you know, they got great passion, great desire, but there's times you think that needs to be coached. Now, the problem is, I don't know if they see it. So that's where the issue is, I think. You know, I don't think they see it to work on it. And you think, well, no, don't let that go. And then it's this other thing that about the game, allowing the game to flow and, you know, and let that be the teacher. But at the same time, if I'm making the same mistake and I'm not learning from it, I need help. You can't let it go. And that's what annoys me the most at times. It's like it's let go. But it will learn, you know, that they'll problem solve. And yeah, they'll problem solve. But if I don't know something, I don't know it. It's a fact.
I think you're spot on in there. That whole phrase of let the game be the teacher, I'll be honest with you, I think it's nonsense. I don't think the game can be a teacher for anyone unless there's explicit facilitation going around it. There has to be someone managing the environment. And it's not just, yes, you know, we can argue to the cows come, of course you're going to develop. You know, if you put a player on a pitch every single day for 60 minutes, five times a week, they're definitely going to get better. Of course they are.
Yeah.
But whether they're getting better.
But the thing is, you get better at the wrong habits. And if something is wrong, you're just getting better at something.
Yeah, because you're not aware of it, right? Like you said, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I think that's the key bit. And I think a lot of coaches, you know, you've mentioned a kind of a brief example there, really, and are getting away with actually just letting them play. But reality is they don't stop it, they don't coach it, they don't do any of the things that
I was getting frustrated. Yeah, I was getting frustrated initially, but then I started reflecting on myself, and I'm thinking, is it just about the letting the game be the teacher, or is that individual not spotting that mistake?
Then comes the question, right? If the person's not spotting the mistake, should they be in the environment?
That's it. Yeah, that's the other problem. But when they meet the criteria in terms of qualifications, because they've passed certain qualifications and they come in, then it's scary as well. And like I said, you know, other thing they're raising the number of, you know, A license and B license. And I was through that journey. But I have to say, I had to, you know, graft a lot to get those qualifications and get that experience to get me to where I am. I'm certainly nowhere near where I want to be.
100%. I've got a lot of work. So what are your thoughts on the idea that, you know, again, it's a topic of discussion I've had with a few people recently around whether, you know, the UEFA qualifications, mainly the B and the A license, still hold the same weight they maybe once did.
No, I don't think so. I think there's been a lot of, in my opinion, bridging the gap between England and other countries, i.e. Germany and so on, because they've got a lot more qualified A license and B license coaches, and Spain, I think, is, if I'm not correct. So it was a lot of that bridging that gap as well. So there was quite a lot of coaches qualifying here. But at the same time, is the number of jobs and opportunities for them to excel in, i.e. academy opportunities or, you know, first team opportunities, is not enough. So I think the qualification itself is the A license itself. Now the pro license is the hardest one to get into. The A license should be a little bit like that, in my opinion. Mm. Once you get that, it should open you certain doors. But it seems to be everybody seems to have it nowadays. So
100%, like you pop on Facebook, or, you know, not that I use Facebook, but Twitter, all your sort of, you know, Instagram, and, you know, even LinkedIn, every day, new person's got an A license, a B license, A license, and it's just like, yeah, I don't even care about this stuff no more.
No, it's become a redundant one. Like I said, everybody used to look forward to that. You know, the B license was kind of the highest level, and then, you know, you're aspiring to go into the A license, it was hard to get into. But look, you know, I hope for the people that are qualifying, they're not missing out in terms of the learning, because yes, we all might have that qualification. It doesn't mean that it's going to make us great coaches, but 100%. The learning is the more important bit.
100%. So let's come back to your journey now. You know, you mentioned that you was at London Tigers doing the semi-pro stuff. You mentioned that you had a brief couple of years at Crystal Palace. Just talk about that a little bit. What was that experience like going into the academy at that stage? At such a young age as well.
Yeah, I was 19 at the time, and I was still playing, and I was still at university. And David Moss at the time was the academy manager at Crystal Palace, and they wanted to get some interns to come and do some analysis, and basically get some good clips of different age groups and create like a highlight reel. So they came to the university at Kingston and asked for a couple of students. So quite a few of us kind of went into it, and then he picked myself and one other person. At the time, I had a friend at Palace that was coaching with the 16s as an assistant. So I went in there as a kind of doing analysis, and then asked if there's an opportunity to kind of, because I was doing coaching on the side at London Tigers with their youth teams and the reserve team, and asked if it's possible to kind of do some coaching with them. So I started doing some bits with the 7s and 8s. And I did that for the whole year whilst I was doing this analysis with the 18s and 21s and other age groups, which was quite a good experience on its own. Once I was doing that, the next year I got offered an opportunity to kind of go into the academy, work with the under 13s at the time. So I spent another year there. I quite enjoyed it. Definitely something that it opened my eyes of the standard of the detail or the quality of player, and where I wanted to be. It was an opportunity that kind of worked itself out gradually through an opportunity that opened up at university.
And you know, just talk about that. Obviously, what was a massive difference from grassroots environment moving into the academy, and how would you say that's transitioned now over the years? Because, you know, that was probably before ECCC or around the time ECCC came in. There's been massive changes since then, probably especially with Crystal Palace as an academy in itself, but just as a general landscape in terms of academy football.
Yeah, and look, for me, it was obviously an eye-opening. The players were specimens physically, especially as we know Crystal Palace as well, and the area and the catchment area they had. So I did a bit of scouting actually at the same time as I was there, so I brought a couple of players in. So physically, they were a different standard, technically tidier. There was something that I always thought, oh, academy forward, you're always going to have players that are always professional and focused, but you still had those mavericks in there. But those mavericks were the ones that always, the creative ones and the game, the ones that, you know, would change the game. So it was about how you deal with those ones in there. So it wasn't too dissimilar to what you do in grassroots, but the standards of technically, physically was obviously very apparent. But with regards to everything else, socially and psychologically, you still had the same challenges, really, because they were still human beings.
100%. How would you say that's kind of lent itself to where we are now in today's climate, in the fact that, you know, younger players are getting, you know, talk about being physical specimens, they're probably getting more and more athletic nowadays. Would you agree?
100%. I think it's definitely a pillar that every club is looking at, because really, if you look at it, rugby started similar to what football was probably 10 years ago, as in it was a gentleman's sport. It was, you know, lean, athletic, but not huge, muscular, big, powerful athletes. But then they gradually changed. So as you look at it now, it's completely different sport. I think football's gradually changed now at the same in the same manner. And if you look at it, the S&C program, the gym program, the nutrition, everything else is so high, and then within football is so important as what you do on the pitch, as you know, technically, tactically as well. So the athlete itself, it's really important that whoever we bring in is able to cope to that, to those demands. So we get that every day, you know, where you come in and you're looking at many different things. Is he a good mover? Is he, you know, quick, strong, powerful? Has he got the ability physically to mold and to change into what we perceive him to be in, you know, in a couple of years' time, especially when we're talking about youth development players. As they get into PDP, you more or less kind of know, you're just refining certain bits. But yeah, I think football has definitely changed and it's gone in that manner. And obviously you can understand that because it's becoming quicker, you know, a much faster game.
So let's talk about then, obviously, much faster game, move forward in your journey. You've gone from being at the Tigers, Crystal Palace, gone back to Tigers to become head coach. And then, you know, where did your journey go through from then?
At London Tigers, I was, I came back doing it a bit with the reserve team and then assistant manager with the first team. Again, at the same similar time that I was at Palace, I was doing 2-3 roles all the time. I was juggling and I'm still doing sometimes. It's just, that's the way I've been. I can't keep to one role. So yeah, I was doing my university, finishing that off, and then I was assisting the manager who's now in Georgia, actually doing quite well for himself in the Super League there. He left 3 months whilst I was assistant to him, so I got left to the job, you know, at 23, got thrown in it in September. They had lost, well, we had lost, I should say, all 6 games that I had started, so it was a completely different challenge. You know, it wasn't
who was the head coach?
Georgi Manishvili. He's in Georgia now, Dinamo Tbilisi. He got an opportunity, so he left. And then they handed it to me. Loads of conversations. I was too young, I was this and that. But knowing, like speaking to the chairman now, and I always ask him, because he asked for my opinion about new coaches. I said, well, give it to them, you know, that if they want to do it, they're serious and professional. Said, yeah, because you gave me the opportunity. Said, yeah, but you were different. You know, you were, for your age, you were really focused and really driven and really, you know, professional what you're doing, although the players were older than you. I started there 6 games in. We had lost everything. The coach leaves and then I'm left to kind of rebuild everything and try and keep the team in the league. We didn't win a game until, I think, 11th game or so on, and then gradually started to win some games and managed to keep the team up, which was, you know, for me, quite a great achievement, right? for a semi-pro team, and especially with the biggest challenge really wasn't just that, it was managing my own friends that I was playing with.
What was that like? Because obviously, you know, transitioning from not just becoming assistant coach to assistant manager, then to, you know, a head coach, but managing players that are older than you and probably some that are probably a lot more experienced than you in some ways. You know, for a young coach, you know, it's probably something. There's probably a lot of listeners out here thinking, I'd love to go into a semi-pro environment. Or I'd love to go into first team environment, but they're still quite young in their journeys and they've got those ambitions. And you know, maybe they haven't really fully accepted and understood and acknowledged that this is actually one of the biggest challenges they probably could face. So how did you navigate that?
It was hard, but I didn't know about these certain things like values and beliefs and so on. I only learned about this maybe 6-7 years ago when I was doing the LMA diploma, which I can talk a little bit more after, but I didn't know about that. But I was so strong in what I wanted to achieve for myself, and I always thought of myself, I'm a professional in what I do. So if I think this is the right thing to do, and if there's going to be consequences for somebody not to play or not to be selected, I was adamant that I was going to do that. It wasn't going to be, oh, I have to play him because he's my friend over somebody else. I needed to get results. So I made sure that I did that job as professionally as I could throughout, and I stuck to my values and beliefs, as I said, without even knowing what they were at the time. It was really difficult. I lost quite a few friends at the time that either didn't play for the team anymore or didn't speak to. I was chatting to people, you know, that when I was doing the job for hours on the phone, pick up the phone, you know, at different times, calling, speaking to one other person. He's got an opinion how we should play. The other one has got an opinion. And I'm just saying, I'm constantly sticking to how I think. Now, I've made mistakes, don't get me wrong. But those mistakes, I think, have certainly helped me on.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My journey. I didn't make them twice, I'd like to think. But yeah, it was difficult, but you got to stick to why you're doing it. Where do you see it going? Are you doing it professionally or are you just doing it as a hobby and just for fun? And because if you're doing it for hobby and fun, then there's no point pissing people off, let's say, and upsetting people. You just go with the flow. But I was really focused. I wanted to do it properly and achieve something. And I don't think I would have done that without, as I said, keep the team up in the league if I didn't lose a couple of the friends at the time.
Have you made friends up and made up with them now, or how does that pan out?
Yeah, look, there's that thing that they say, you know, some people are there for just this short journey, the parts on a rocket that fall off. You know, if you want to go somewhere, they're not going to always come with you. So some of them I have, some of them not. You know, sometimes some of them on social media say hello sometimes, but not to the extent that it was before. But I know that, you know, the ones that have believed it and true friends, they've stuck by it, even though at the time, like I said, they didn't play as much or they didn't believe in what I was doing.
So, you know, how's your journey transitioned from then? So how long was you in that role for? And, you know, and then talk us about how you got to your current role.
Yeah, so basically in that role, I was for 5 years. Different challenges, like I said, throughout it, some good achievements. Went in like four rounds in the FA Cup, which was a really good year in one season. Missed out from playing a League Two team. So that was, you know, we had some of the challenge there. Gradually through that, we'd raise a little bit of money for different things, for tracksuits and for transport and so on. So it was different challenges throughout. I did jobs in there that I didn't, you know, I couldn't imagine doing, driving minibus, you know, washing kit sometimes, or doing match programs, or stocking up the bar, or whatever it was. So the learning I got from that, it really excelled me going forward. I went from there after the 5 years. I was doing a program. I set up a little club in an American school myself, which grew to about 6-7 teams. And then I left that, but the opportunity came up at Watford doing part time. Whilst I was doing the semi-pro team, can you like imagine? Like, I was doing 2 days there, 3 days there, and then gradually I started at under 10s at Watford and moved to under 9s one season, then moved to 11s, 12s, 13s, 15s, 16s, and then during that middle gap, so everything overlaps really. So I can't really give you a timeline per se, but as I finished with the semi-pro team, 2 years in the academy at Watford, the ladies job came up. So I thought, you know, I want to try this. I want to see how that is, you know, something new, something different. And then that was a different challenge because the team had changed as well completely. So we had to rebuild that team as well. So then I ended up now, I'm in at Watford, two jobs at Watford, academy, ladies, gradually growing into it. I get the 15, 16 job full time. Which I then have to kind of step away from the ladies for a bit. As I'm growing into that, I come back into the ladies, go back into it. Now I end up 8 years down the line at Watford, doing assisting the 18s and leading the 15, 16s age group. So yeah, it's a long journey.
Long journey for sure, but obviously, you know, that there was probably plenty of ups and downs along the way. In fact, I know there would have been. So, you know, let's talk about that, because obviously there's a few different things that we kind of haven't really kind of covered really. You know, what are some of the challenges that you faced in getting there? At times, you know, I think we live in a world now where everyone wants instant gratification. They want instant success. They want to get those, you know, the role that they want. They want it now. Mm. Well, you know, how did you deal with that? And, you know, what were some of the things that the challenge that you faced? And I know, especially, you know, if you think back to the start of your journey, having, you know, come over from Albania and, you know, got into football the way you did and got into coaching the way you did. And, you know, did you think it was, there was any times where maybe it was quite unfair for you and you weren't getting any opportunity that you deserved maybe?
It's a delicate subject. I've always believed that. I think, look, that there is always those things where, you know, you think, oh, I deserve this opportunity. Why am I not getting it? But I've always said to myself, I'm never going to look at, you know, the decision makers, what's their reasoning. I would look at myself, like I said to you before, in normal conversations, am I qualified enough? Am I experienced enough to get this role? Have I done everything I can to get this role? And then the ultimate bit is, who am I competing against? Who else is applying for that role? You know, because there's people internally that are probably more experienced. There's people externally that are more experienced. So I've always looked at myself first. Have I done everything I can to make sure I got that role? Yes, there's a perception about my background and so on, but it does not make me who I am. Unfortunately, that's just the way the world is. People, you know, read things and see things and they build certain perceptions around certain communities. And unfortunately, you know, that's not the true fact. There's loads of hardworking people like myself trying to make a living. So if that has happened, it's saddening. But it hasn't stopped me. It hasn't stopped me from trying to go where I want to go. And I'm getting there. I might be getting there 2 years down the line, where I should have probably been 2 years ago, but it doesn't affect me. I think the process is the more important bit for me, and I've learned so much from it. I met some great people that have got to know me and actually, you know, speak quite nicely after getting to know me without building a perception, like I said, about my background. And I'm proud of where I'm from, and I think people need to open their eyes a bit more.
I think you're spot on, and I think, you know, everything you said, I fully agree with it. I think something that's really key in what you've said there is you know, it resonates with me really well around this quote, around it's not about the destination, it's about the journey and the process of, you know, who you become rather than what you become, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And I think you know, you speak very well about that. And I think if there's anything for anyone to kind of take away from this is, and this is something that I learned early on as well. I say early on, probably around the time that we were working together, really, is that we can want it as fast as we want it. We can want it as early as we want it, but everyone's on a different journey. Mm-hmm. And we're almost sometimes we're led to believe, oh, we should have it by this time. Why should we have it by this time? You know, we can't really say when we should have it. We can have an idea of when we want it. Can we, you know, yeah. But reality is we're all going to go on different journeys. We're all going to meet people at different points of our journey. We're all going to, you know, look the right part in someone's perspective at a certain time when they come across us. So I think, you know, timing is everything, but it's understanding that just because it's taken Armand 8 years doesn't mean it should take me 8 years. It could take me 12, it could take me 6, but it doesn't make me any better or worse than Armand. Do you know what I mean?
I think the important bit is you don't give up, and if you really love it, you'd still be doing it and finding different ways to develop yourself. I think you got to be careful, because the way I look at it, and not every academy is the same, obviously we know about, you know, Cat 1s to 4s and so on, but 92 clubs, 92 roles, same as mine. I don't know how many coaches are getting qualified every year, how many opportunities are coming up, how many people go out of their job and then come back into it. So I'm competing I'm in one in 92, really. You know, if I come out of that job, I'm waiting for one of those other guys to leave to kind of go back into it. So
that's if you want to get that same job again.
Yeah, that same job or a job above, you know.
100%. So, and then it's the other thing. I think you made a great point there as well around, and I say this to people that are applying for qualification, you know, especially in the role that I'm doing now and the work that I do now, I've got a lot of people who are trying to get onto the qualifications, whether that be, you know, UEFA-C, AB, whatever it is. And it's, oh, you know, I'm still applying. I've been applying for a number of years. Yeah, but what you don't understand is this, exactly what you just said. Every year that passes by, if you're, let's just say you're applying for an A license, there's probably another 500 people who've just applied as well that have just been qualified in the last 12 months. Since you last applied and didn't get it, what are you doing now? And exactly what you said earlier, what are you doing now qualifies you to be the person who goes ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know, I remember having a conversation with someone recently around the idea of they're trying to apply for their B license, as an example. Asked him where are you coaching at the moment? And he said, I can't remember what league it was, but basically it was like a Division 10 team.
Yeah.
I said, well, you don't even need a B license for that. Yeah, but then he goes, yeah, but I was working at this level before. Yeah, but you're not working there now. And there is people that are working there now. So what are you doing now? It's not about what you've necessarily done in the past, it's about what you're doing now. And that's one of the biggest things that, you know, that I've kind of really kind of been trying to push onto people, is that, you know, are you getting that consistent, ongoing experience? And it's not just about, I did this once, I did that once upon a time. And it's like, no, what are you doing now is present, that's what's relevant now. So kind of, you know, just to build on that then, you know, you spoke briefly around the idea of maybe academy coaches coming in now, not all of them maybe being up to scratch, and some of them, you know, you kind of making your eyes open a little bit and thinking, wow, what's going on here? But what would your advice be to those coaches who are now trying to get into academies now? And obviously, you know, you and I both understand the landscape and that the qualifications isn't enough.
No.
There's hundreds and hundreds of people getting more qualified every single day. What are the things that they maybe can start to think about doing to maybe separate themselves or prepare themselves for, you know, moving into that world of academy football?
I can speak a bit more about, I was going to say, I can only speak about myself. I did a lot of other qualifications on top of, and I'm not talking about football qualifications. I did analysis. I did, like I said, those physiotherapy stuff. I did talent ID. I'm doing it now. You know, I'm doing the level 3 now. That's something, and just to open my eyes a bit more and learn a bit more about different aspects of football and how that's going to give me a little edge here and there. You know, obviously I did my degree as well. So that's the qualifications to the side. I think with the experience, I threw myself in, you know, in the deep end in every role that I've kind of had. You know, the semi-pro team was one of them at 23. The ladies team, I didn't know much about. You know, I wanted to learn something, you know, different. It was a massive learning experience for me working in the women's game. And then outside, you know, don't neglect an opportunity to work and, you know, with different age groups, to learn about that age group and stick to that age group. You know, a lot of people jump from one place to another, just jumping ships. I think it's important that you develop and you learn and you find, you know, what is your passion and which age groups you want to work with, and then stick to that and really learn about, you know, because it's not just about the football, you know, the technical and tactical stuff. It's also a lot about the psychological and social stuff about the individual.
There's a massive challenge there, though, isn't there? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that will go down the view of, yeah, you need to work your way up through the age groups. But what, you know, what about those coaches, you know, like you quite rightly said, you know where you want to work. Like for me, I knew early on, within a couple of years of me working, I didn't really have a massive passion for working in the, you know, with the younger age groups. Maybe that's because of where I started my journey. I started my journey working with under 14s and 15s.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I just felt like I was at home straight away with that age group. And it's kind of always been between kind of that 15 to kind of 21 age range across different environments, whether that be colleges, universities, and, you know, academy football, whatever that might be. And it's just, you know, I've kind of always been there. And whereas, you know, some people will be like, well, no, you've got to work your way up, and, you know, you've got to go through the foundation phase, you've got to go through youth development phase, you've got to go through the professional development phase. There'll be, you know, people from a school of thought that will say you need to understand all the age groups. And, you know, I get that, but you can't specialize in everything.
No, you can't. You know, you ain't going to become the best at old age groups. And I think you're really gonna hone into to a certain age group. There's nothing wrong with experiencing and finding your place. There's certain, like, you'll know, because dealing with the players, especially young athletes, you'll be talking about when you go through, you know, the little ones from 5, 6 to about 11, 12 and so on. And then they gradually start to change. Are you able to cope with them? Are you able to deal with them? And like I said, it's not just about the technical, tactical stuff. It's about the social stuff. Are you able to deal with the individual? And then as you grow up the age groups, you've got a lot more competition in terms of the roles as well. You know, you're going to be really, really be working and grafting to really get up to that. And a lot of people fall out because they can't get a full-time job into a, you know, a PDP or a role that they want to. Like, it's taken me, like I said, 14 years to get to where I got to, you know, but I've had to go through it. But I've wanted to learn about the journey. You know, I've worked with from under 9s now to under 18s, and there's one or two individuals now currently under 18s I work with from there on, under 10, under 12, under 13, 15, 16, and now 18s. And I've learned so much about, as much as obviously I like to think they learn from me, but I've learned so much about them and how they've grown up and how they developed about as an individual. And then physically, we're talking, you know, we spoke about earlier, and then socially and psychologically, how they develop as well. Are they able to cope with that pressure? But I think it's hard to find unless you're doing it outside. I think you're not going to find that when you come into the academy straight away. You're going to have to spend a lot more time to kind of know which age groups you want to work with, but you've got to find that out with the clubs that you're working with. And if you've got a special age group that you like working with, stick to that and, you know, become an expert at it, because there is a shortage and of people. And I know only a few that have said, okay, look, I'm really good at these age groups, I'm going to stick to it. And one of them is currently working with me at the moment, and he's quite good at it, you know, and he's stuck to those age groups, which I really admire. For me, it's always similar to you. I've always wanted to work with all age groups, because with the semi-pro stuff and so on, I've always had it in and around my journey kind of thing and my goal. So I knew where I wanted to get to, but at the same time, I also wanted to learn about what the player development looks like. That's why I did all the age groups going through, and I was patient. It will take a lot of time, you know, to get to full-time work in an academy if you want to do that. If you're going to work part-time, then, you know, I can understand, you know, maybe you might want to experience the old age groups or different age groups, but really try and experience that outside the academy.
So, you know, let's just talk about that a little bit. Obviously, you know, you're working as the under-18s assistant and lead 15 and 16s. What does that role look like on a day-to-day? You know, there'll be a lot of people who are kind of aspiring and, you know, thinking about moving into a role like that in the future and or maybe pushing for that sort of role now. What does that look like for a day-to-day? Obviously, every club's different.
Yeah.
But how does it look for you?
This role is quite new. You know, I see a lot of clubs starting to do it now, which I think is a role that is very, very important in terms of the transition between 16s to 18s football, because I work with the 16s obviously in the evening and then I work with the 18 during the day. So let's go through a week really. Monday I'd come in midday, work in the office obviously with the BDP staff, and then in the evening I'd work with the 15 16s, and then Tuesday it's a full day, 8 till 8, starting with 18s preparation, training, and then whatever we need to do after that. And then we got afternoon with the 15, 16s. Then Wednesday I have off, but I tend to come in if we got a game with the 15s. Then Thursday is the same as Tuesday. It's a full day, 8 till 8, doing the 18s in the morning. And then afternoon, depending if we do sometimes double sessions. And then we'll go into the 15, 16s. Friday's 18s match prep, match day minus one. Saturday then is 16s and 18s, they play side by side. So wherever we play, if we're playing at home, they play the same time, because players move across from 16s to 18s. So we'll have the match then. And Sundays, sometimes obviously depends on certain games, I'll go in for the 15s games, because they play on a Sunday.
But 16s, when do you rest?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some half days here and there, but mainly, you know, Wednesday, as I said, not every Sunday I had to go in, so I do get a Sunday off here and there.
No, I think you know, the reason why I asked the question, because there's going to be a lot of people going thinking about it, and they don't really understand how much time it takes to obviously work in football. You know, there's so many of us that are looking to, you know, secure full-time roles in football and, you know, be on that journey, but there's a lot of sacrifice in there as well. You know, not just your personal time, but even, you know, I know a few people that I speak to now, and, you know, it's probably older than me now, and they probably said, you know, they haven't had a chance to settle down and have a family because football's kind of consumed their lives and things like that. So, you know, these are just obviously some of the considerations that I want people to really think about when they're obviously now looking at where on this journey they're going to go and maybe what some of the challenges that they're going to face along the way. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Look, from a personal experience, it is difficult. If you're working 16s and below, you're working in the evenings. Minimum 3 days, so that, forget about that. There's no social life for those 3 days. You'll get a Friday, you might get a Wednesday, depending on your program. And if you're doing the role I'm doing, you're working more or less quite, you know, from morning till evening, two of the days, and then the weekends, one day is taken away completely, depending on what age groups you're working with, whether that's 16s and 18s, which play on a Saturday, or if you work in 15s and below, the Sunday is taken away. But if you really want to do it, look, if someone is really willing to do it, I think you got to make those sacrifices. If, like everything in life, really, if you want to be the best, you got to sacrifice, whether that's a little bit of family time, a little bit of friends, a little bit of everything. But you have to, if you manage your time right, you make it up in different ways. You know, the days that you have off, the evenings that you have off. But it is, the phrase is a single man's job. So, you know, you gotta be careful it doesn't engulf you completely. But at the same time, you know, if you really want to achieve it, you'll have to do it. You have to go through that journey for a period of time.
What would you say some of the biggest things that you've learned along the way? You know, there's probably loads of different experiences that you've had along the way throughout that, and probably loads of, you know, if you think back on some key moments that, you know, you've experienced throughout your time, right from the beginning of your journey as a coach to where you are now, you know, you probably had some really key individuals that may have been really influential for you as well. So if you just had to reflect back now, what were some of the biggest messages that you've learned?
I think I've learned a lot about myself more than anything, who I am, what I believe in, what my values are. That's probably the biggest thing I've learned, how those values have been instilled in me. And now I can talk a little bit about the individuals. It started, like I said, from my dad, in terms of his discipline and his focus, and he's always been a serious type of character. And whatever he does it properly. The passion obviously started from him. And then from there, with the football stuff, the coaches that I had, all of them doing quite well in terms of from where they started with the semi-pro team, but all had really, they set the right environment, they build trust around people, they build relationships around the group and the individuals. So I think it's so important that I don't think people understand to build those relationships. That the things that other stuff is my values, as in what I believe in, what makes me wake up every day, you know, what makes me tick. I learned that as I went through, as I said, when it was a bit more apparent through the LMA diploma, where I had to do an assignment, then I had to really dig into myself and what I really believed in. And as I went through, I had to think about not things, I had time frames and goals, but I had to be careful. If I didn't achieve certain goals, you can reset your time frame. If you want to really do it, don't hold yourself to complete, because you might not be down to you, as in the role that I got. You know, if I wanted to get that 3-4 years ago, let's say,
it wasn't in your control,
but it wasn't in my control, so I can't give up, you know, after committing.
I think you make a great point then. I think, you know, just something I'd add to that is this is one of the things I learned a few years back as well, and it's okay to change your goals as well. Just because that's the goal that I had when I was 19 doesn't mean that's the goal that I have to have when I'm 29 or 39. You know, I can change my goals, but because I've changed. You've changed. We've all changed. You know, it's been 10 years since I set that goal. Do I still want that? Do I still have the same attachment to that goal that I had back then? And, you know, one of the biggest things that I've started to ask myself is, or I've really learned in the last few years, is around knowing the why behind everything. Right. Yeah. So if that was my goal, what was the goal about? Was it really because I wanted that job? Was it because I wanted that career? Or was there something else, you know, underlying to that? And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've picked up, you know, and it kind of just, you know, adds on to your point around knowing what it is that you want, understanding the time frames can change, and, you know, recognizing what's in and what's out of your control.
No, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that, changing those time frames. And the other stuff I would say, mate, is the process is so important, and believing in it. And the stuff that come with it, you'll learn certain things that you weren't planning to learn, or the one planning to kind of go through, you'll have to go through, and being open to it, and kind of go with the journey as well. Mold as you go, you know, you'll change. Well, I shouldn't say change. I haven't changed my core. And as I said, I didn't know much about values and so on. I haven't changed my core values. So me as a person, I have not changed. I've certainly developed myself, because I've done so many different, you know, qualifications and so on, and experiences, and met loads of different people that have helped me develop, but I haven't changed what I believe in. So getting those values written down is really important. The other thing I would say is making sure that you're not comparing. I used to do that quite a lot at the beginning. You know, I'm comparing with certain individuals and trying to compete. It's nothing wrong with that, but it's, I look back into it now, like you said about where I've come from, and now I sit in a table with people that have had more opportunity than I've had. You know, I've had more access to certain things. And I'm saying in the same table, you know, from my background, be proud of, you know, the achievements that you achieve as well, you gain along the way. So I think it's also important to celebrate those achievements as well.
I think you're spot on. I think it is just celebrating a small win just to kind of keep yourself going. Because even on that difficult journey sometimes where maybe things aren't going your way, things aren't, you know, being achieved in the times that you set yourself, where even though you don't want to accept it, those things aren't in your control. So you can get frustrated. Mm-hmm. And, oh, why can't I have this now? Why can't I have this now? But actually, you know, and I think that's the bit where you need to celebrate your small wins. And sometimes look back at where you started your journey and where you've got to now and some of the things that you kind of picked up along the way. So, you know, kind of on that then, where you are now, under-18s assistant, lead, you know, lead YLEP coach at Watford. If you had to take yourself back to the start of your journey, you know, getting into the coaching world at 18, thinking about doing, you know, you're a level one coach, set out to your level one. And, what's one bit of advice that you'd give yourself if you could have that conversation?
Believe in the process. That's the thing, because if I look at back into it and I say, and I break it down and I look at the whole journey, oh, bloody hell, I might not even go into it because there's been some challenges, the journey, how long it's taken me to get there and so on. But believing in the process has helped me develop as a person, not just as a football coach, if that makes sense. So believe in that process, go with the flow, be patient with yourself and with others as well. I've had to, you know, different management teams that have come in and gone and so on. I've had to build trust with them and then all of a sudden they go and new people come in. Then I have to build trust with them again. So there might have been the opportunity earlier, but I didn't get it. I had to be patient with myself as well.
Just on that then, you know, very, very briefly, you talk about being patient. Now, what does that look like for you practically when you're being patient? Because, you know, some people just see being patient has just become a bit idle. Wait for it. What does that being patient look like for you?
It's a really good question, to be honest, because being patient is, I had to reflect on whether I got that. Like I said, of course, there was other challenges I couldn't control, but there's things like, have I got experience enough, you know, enough experience to get that job? Have I got enough qualifications to get that job? Have I done enough to do this? Have I, whatever it is, my presentation skills, have I done enough? So then, the patience is the next time it comes, I need to develop these things. I can't just, I'll wait around and then, yeah, let's see what happens next time because maybe I'll be luckier. But you have to work hard, you know, and it's that saying, you know, that the harder I seem to work, the luckier I seem to get. So I've got to try and keep developing on the certain areas and find out, you know, certain people will tell you why you didn't get the role. And I was told, you know, certain bits that I need to develop in, I have to go consciously away and develop it and work on it consciously and not just say, okay, I might develop it with time and by being patient. As I said, it's about waiting for that next opportunity, but doing something, the little bits here and there to make sure you develop before the next opportunity comes, because there's a reason why you didn't get it this time.
100%, and there's some underlying messages in what you said there as well, in that seek feedback. But don't just get it for the sake of getting feedback, because I know plenty of people that do that, you know, oh, can I get some feedback? But they're really happy when the feedback aligns with their own thoughts.
Yeah.
And I think it's being open to accepting actually the reason you didn't get the job or this opportunity or this whatever it was because of X. Even if you don't agree with X, it's not about what you agree with.
Yeah.
It's about X being the perception of the person making the opportunity accessible for you. And that bit, I think, is probably one of the biggest things that I learned early in my journey as well. Is that, you know, it's not about what I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get into an opportunity. I'm trying to get into a role. I'm trying to get into a position that someone else has got a perspective on. What's their perspective? What do they want to see? What do they want to understand? And even if, you know, that might not be necessarily what I want, then I have to make a decision. Do I have to change myself to fit into that role? Or do I have to compromise myself to fit into that role? And if I'm compromising myself, then that role is not for me.
No, absolutely. You're changing your values and beliefs and who
exactly.
You are. No, it's very true.
Exactly. Now, you know, if there's room for flexibility that's not going to compromise the values and beliefs, then yeah, you might need to adapt. You might need to. But if it, again, like you said, as soon as you compromise those values and beliefs, then it's probably not there in the first place.
100%. Another thing I'd say is, and I don't know if we're ending up here, but more importantly is you have, well, something that stuck to me. Success is only borrowed and not owned. So you have to constantly keep ahead of other people, or keep ahead. If you're in a certain role, you need to keep working to stay in that role. Or if you want to go to the next one, and you constantly have to do it because somebody else is doing something, you know, to catch up or to compete with you. So if you didn't get that role this time, you know, don't think just because, like I said, the weight, you know, you're doing little bits here and, you know, and there, you need to do enough to make sure that whoever is challenging you next time is, you know, it's not going to be better than you. But that's something that I stick by as well. You know, and even if I'm in that role, I don't want to be complacent. You know, there's somebody else that's working harder or might get the opportunity, and I might be pushed out. So I need to make sure that whatever I've gained does not get taken away from me.
100%. And it kind of resonates with me really well around another quote that, you know, about being ready, not getting ready.
Yeah.
Right. Don't wait for the opportunity to come before you say, I'm going to prepare for it. Prepare for from now before. True. As long as you're working, as long as you're working on yourself, you know that, and that personal development piece is so key here, where you're just constantly looking to better yourself to the point where you don't know what's coming around the corner, but when it comes, you're ready to go. And you're not stressing out, you're not anxious, you're not, you know, having to do some, you know, and obviously, you know, there's little bits that you're gonna have to do and maybe polish up on, and of course, but in terms of a general foundation, you're there, you're ready, set to go. So I think definitely great messages there. Armand, what's next for you, man?
Step by step, and like I said, from a selfish perspective, I really enjoyed the journey that I've been in. I've got 3-4 players that are still with us. Hopefully they'll still continue to be with us the next couple of years, just from me as well, not just for them, but from my selfish perspective, is I wanted to see what the journey of a player looks like. I started under 10s myself, went to 9s, 12s, 13s, 15s, 16s, that's 18s now. I've done some bits with the 21s here and there, but there's 3-4 players that, like I said, I had them at under 10s, at foundation phase. I had them at youth development phase for four years. And then now I'm currently working with them at PDP. I'd like to continue to work with them as they go to 21s if I get the opportunity one day. But it's been a really good learning. So I want to challenge myself for one more step to go into the maybe 21s football to see how that last stage of a player development looks like, as a more of a learning than anything. But I'd love to go into first team in the next 3 to 5 years, not putting myself too much pressure, but I do want to go back into it. I miss the competition. I miss, you know, preparing and for certain games and playing for points. I do get that now, you know, with 18s, but it's not the same. It's not all about points. Although there's a league table, it's about development still. But I want to compete on a daily basis with other positions where you're problem solving, you're challenging yourself. Are you ready? You know, have all your preps been done properly during the week to go and compete? And then are you problem solving in the game? All those little things give me the buzz. And that's why I went into, like I said, semi-pro stuff and then the women's football as well, because it allowed me to do that. So yeah, I think 3 to 5 years, hopefully somewhere in the first team somewhere.
Amazing. I wish you all the best, man. I'm sure we'll have a conversation about a year's time where you're now the lead 21s coach.
I appreciate that, hopefully.
Oh man, look, it's been a pleasure, man. Really great insights. Really, you know, it's really good to kind of catch up with you and hear about your journey and how you've got to where you got to now. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of coaches listening to this thinking the same thing. So yeah, it's been a massive, massive thank you. And you know, if anyone wants to get in touch, is there anywhere they can do that?
Yeah, social media, Armand Kavaya, and both Instagram and LinkedIn. So if anybody needs any help with anything, I'm more than happy to help and support. But no, it's been a pleasure. It's always nice talking to yourself. Quite similar mindset. So I really appreciate you inviting me into the show.
Amazing. Thank you, Armand.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.